We have a wonderful group of people that help us out, not just our team, that is Team Cassie, but obviously we have some super owners that give us good quality horses. And from the beginning, I didn't realize until somebody brought it up, I guess, you know, there's the three classics in the U.S. and then the three Canadian classics. And I think we've won 5 out of the last 6, which is, I didn't even realize that until somebody said that the other day. But, you know, that's kind of what, anytime we get a horse, that's what we aim for. So I feel, I feel very, very fortunate to be able to, like I said, to have these type of horses and to be able to win them.
We had a conversation, I guess it was 4 or 5 years ago, and you told me that you were putting an emphasis, when it came to your program, you were putting an emphasis on winning classic races and finding horses that could win classic races. What things specifically have you done over the past several years that have allowed you to have this kind of success?
Well, we made some major changes. I guess it would have been 5, 6, 7 years ago when we wanted to start focusing more on the U.S. We went, and a lot of people don't know this, but we built a training center. And we geared it to suit North America, not just Canada, but more in the U.S. And you're starting to see this. I said to a few people, I said, we've been fortunate, and this was 3 or 4 years ago, we've done a lot of good things. And I said, but this training center and is going to make us even better. And it's worked.
How about the horses you've been able to select and have owners give you horses that kind of fit those profiles? Tell me about the horses.
Well, of course, you know, it's a snowball effect. Once if you can have some success, it allows you to then train for bigger owners and being able to go out and get the higher quality horses. When you do that, then you have a better shot of winning the classics. I would say 10 years ago that I would be lucky to have 5 horses that could fall in the category of possibly going on to be classic horses. Now maybe 50 every year or 40 or something like that. So
yeah,
you increase your chances and, you know, and it's worked. It's worked well for us.
People won't realize, they think of you as a Canadian because you've had so much success here, but you were born in Indianapolis, Indiana. You grew up in Ocala working around your dad's operation and took out your trainer's license in Massachusetts, winning your first race at the Great Barrington Fair, which is now no longer in existence.
And as a matter of fact, coming back, though.
They are talking about bringing it back.
I want to go back and run a horse there.
About 30 minutes from my hometown where I grew up, actually.
We're going to bring something there if they can.
At that point, think back to those days. Could you ever imagine we'd be sitting here, you being a Hall of Fame trainer and being a multiple classic winning trainer?
No. I mean, if you'd asked me that 15 years ago even, you know, I just didn't know that it would ever. And I was, you know, from a little boy, I always wanted to accomplish those things. But to actually, you know, now be able to say that we've done it is just amazing to me.
Take me back to the moment when War of Will crossed the finish line in front in the Preakness this year.
It was, as far as, you know, any accomplishment we've ever achieved in racing, it was number one for so many reasons. One, to be able to win a classic and to be able to win a race that I've been watching since I was a little boy, to win one of those. And then given all the turmoil in the Kentucky Derby and the other thing, anybody that's been around me has known, I've praised War of Will for a long, long time. And for him to be able to show everybody what I've known about him for a long, you know, there was just so many things. And then I said to my wife, Tina, I said, I don't think I've ever hugged you so hard, and it was nice to do that and have her by my side as well.
Yeah, it's certainly special. You think back on the Derby for a minute here, and you talked about everything that went on in the Kentucky Derby. You and I have talked before. Nobody knows if War of Will would have gone on to win the Kentucky Derby. Only God knows, as you like to say. But was that a tough pill to swallow?
It really wasn't. I was just so happy that he was okay, that everybody was okay, that surprisingly, you know, I think NBC did a story on my brother and I when I was like 10. And I said at that point, they said, what do you want to do when you get older? I said, I want to win the Kentucky Derby. So we haven't been able to achieve that yet. So to lose the opportunity, because who knows what would have happened, but it was going to be a horse race. But it really didn't bother me. I was just so grateful that War of Will was still there. And going back to the Preakness, you know, just be able to run in the Preakness, I was ecstatic. And then to actually go and win it. And I just never really looked back. You know, everybody always wants to say, well, what if? I'm just happy with the results, so there's no really what if.
Let's look ahead 3 weeks after the Preakness then. You come to the Belmont Stakes. War of Will comes into the race in fine shape, and it looks like the Preakness winner is sitting on a big race, and all of a sudden here comes your other horse, Sir Winston, who gives you the victory in that race. Tell me about being in the moment there.
That was a strange moment. It didn't surprise me at all that Sir Winston won. We'd been saying all week long that he was sitting on an extremely good race. It was emotionally, a lot of people looked at me and said, you know, you just didn't seem as happy. But the best way to describe that is if you have two kids, right?
Yeah.
So I have my two children there. One just accomplished one of the greatest feats of all time for us, and the other one kind of had a bad day. And so you want to be happy for your one son or daughter, and then you feel bad for your other one. So it was a little bittersweet.
Yeah.
I was so happy for the farmers because they're wonderful people and they deserve it. And I was happy for Sir Winston. But in the same time, I was sad for War of Will and sad for Gary Barber. So, it was an entirely different feeling than the Preakness.
You know what struck me as being somewhat interesting and a little bit different? You win two classic races, two-thirds of the American Triple Crown, and neither owner is there to accept the trophy with you for either race. Did you ever think that would happen?
Yeah, two different deals. Luckily, you know, Tracy's feeling better now. He was just a little under the weather.
Yeah.
And as we know with Gary, he does have a day job. And I often say, okay, don't quit your day job because we need the day job.
That's been a great relationship. Gary Barber and yourself, you go back a long way. Tell me about that relationship and how that started.
It's kind of crazy. You just, you know, you go back through your life and see how little things can mean so many. So I had a horse called Patriotic and Proud. Aaron Wellman bought all of him from me. I owned part of him from Eclipse for Eclipse. And at the time, then Gary Barber bought a piece of him, and we had some success. He was a pretty nice horse. One day Gary called me and introduced himself and said, I'd like to be a little more prominent in Canada. And I said, well, that sounds good to me. And just, you know, we've had just amazing success. He's a great guy too, and you know, we have we talk pretty well every day. He thinks out of the box. We're fortunate. If you look at a horse like Sir Winston and his career, we took some crazy shots where a lot of owners wouldn't even let me run them in the races. I mean, I can still remember our conversation, Tracy and I. He had won the display here at Woodbine, and we were sitting in Ocala, and we said, I said to Tracy, I said, we could go up and run in the Withers on the dirt. I said, but he may get beat 40 lengths. As long as you're okay with that, I said, because I can't tell you whether he's going to run good or bad. He's an extremely different type of horse to train. And he goes, I'm good with it. Let's try it. And we did that, and he ran well, and it led to other things. But there's what the old saying, if you're afraid to step off first, you can't steal second. So a lot of times, you know, that's what we're doing. And that's probably why you'll never see me be a high percentage trainer. But I also believe there's a lot of horses out there that wouldn't be where they were if I was that trainer, because I will. One thing about me, I'll run them, and I always say they're like puzzles. You have to keep trying the pieces. A lot of times the pieces don't fit, and when they don't fit, you go on to another piece. And that's my philosophy, and it's worked very well for me.
Yeah, we started by talking about the success you've had, certainly over the last 12 months or so, but you've had a lot of success going back before that in your career, obviously being in the Hall of Fame. But how important is it to have owners that are philosophically on the same page as you?
It's everything. You know, I've trained for people in the past that don't want to lose, and that's all fine and dandy, but it doesn't work well that way. Sometimes, you know, you need to explore, and you need to lose to go on to the next step. And you know, I like my horses to get lots of starts. I think every race is a learning experience. And a lot of, you know, questions are answered every time you run. Sometimes you don't like the answers to the questions you ask, but you have to ask them. And usually one thing leads to another. And I'm a big strategizer.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I love playing chess. I'm a strategizer.
How do you strategize with your horses? How do you go about doing that?
I try to treat every horse like he's going to win the Kentucky Derby or the Oaks.
Really?
Or the Breeders' Cup, and until they prove otherwise, that's the way I look at it. And if you talk to any of my assistants, they will tell you that I don't give up. I won't tell you his name, but he said, I can still remember at Saratoga, and we're here with Sir Winston, and I'm thinking, why do you have this horse here? You know, like he was questioning because he didn't think he had any ability. And I can tell you one after another, horses that early on in their careers, Catch a Glimpse was another example. Early on, there was some question whether she was any good or this or that. And I don't give up easy. David Carroll will tell you that. He's another one. And I think out of the box a lot of times. I mean, I don't know. I just don't give up, and I try all different things.
People will see you at the races in the afternoon, and they'll see you in the winner's circle. They'll see you out at the racetrack in the morning like we are right now, and you're watching your horses train. But it sounds to me like this is more of as much as it is about the physical side of things with the horses, it's more of a thinking man's game for you. Is that a right way to put it?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, my dad, you know, before he passed away, always said, Mark, if it doesn't win, Mark knows nothing about it. Somebody last year asked me, who do you like in the Super Bowl? And I said, well, who's in the Super Bowl? If you spend the day with Mark Cassie, you would see me look at 50 to 75 videos of horses training, jogging, galloping. You would see my computer open to 5 or 6 condition books. And also I have a large chart that I can pretty well go back and tell you what the horse has done for their entire career every day. And you'll also see me plotting races, how to get to one place to another. And the horse may be in South Florida Well, recently we had a horse win at Belmont, Chuchina. I ran him in South Florida, and I said to Mr. Disney, I said, this horse can win at Belmont. And we shipped him to Belmont, and he won the other day at Belmont. So I kind of look at the entire picture. So I am a, you know, it's I spend hours and hours. My wife will tell you that. So what will happen today, I'm watching horses train. I'll go back to where we've got a hotel, and for the next 3 or 4 hours, I'll go over charts and everything, and it'll take me most of the afternoon.
How do you balance the time you spend with your profession and the time that you need to spend with those in your personal life?
Luckily, my personal life, my wife is a big part of it, so she understands it, and she spends a lot of time with me, and,
But you're at ball games for your kids, yeah. And you spend time away from racing too. How do you do it?
You may come to a ball game. I'm trying to think who it was. Oh, I think it was Wonder Gadot was running in the stake at Oaklawn, mm-hmm. And my son was getting ready to play baseball, and I also do the scoreboard. And I said, we're going to have to delay the national anthem for 5 minutes. I said, I don't care what you do. I said, I got to watch Wonder Gadot run. I said, so we have to delay the national anthem and the start of the game for 5 minutes. Luckily, I have a fair amount of pull in a lot of places, so I can get some things done. So, yeah, that was funny. I went around the corner of the concession stand and was watching the Wonder Gadot run, and then I said, okay. I came back. I said, we can do the national anthem now.
Play ball.
Yeah. So, you'll see me. You may see me with my my earphones on, or watching a race and watching the baseball game at the same time. I would say, you know, we probably run, we'll start somewhere over 1,000 starts a year, and I would bet that I would maybe miss 5 races of those 1,000.
Okay.
And that usually would be on a plane that doesn't have internet service. I actually plan my flying a lot of times around where I can, so I don't miss races.
Sure.
Or, yeah.
Mark Cassie here on the Horse Racing Radio Network. Let's turn our attention to what's going to happen at Woodbine this weekend in the Queen's Plate. You're going to be in search of a third victory in Canada's version of the Kentucky Derby. You're first with a horse that's not a filly.
I know. I was just going to say that. We're going to try to win one this time with a colt.
Yeah, it's so much luck with the ladies in the past, but the two horses you have this year, they're pretty talented, Skywire and Federal Law. Tell me a little bit about them.
They're two different horses. Federal Law, we're still, you know, the puzzle I was talking about, we're still playing with the pieces there. We're not exactly sure how they fit. We've tried a couple different running styles, and they haven't been as successful as I would have liked, so we're going to try a different one. I think his best chance and only chance to win is for him to rate a little bit and come running. Skywire's a little bit more, he's been done pretty well everything we've asked of him. He's ran hard, he runs well, and I think both, I love the way both of them trained this morning. I think they're both going to be factors.
When you hear the words Queen's Plate, what are some of the things that immediately come to mind for you?
Well, again, you know, I've been a racing fan since I was a little boy, so I've known about the Queen's Plate since I was 5 or 6. In Canada, the Queen's Plate is everything. I mean, it's if you go around North America and somebody says, you're a horse trainer, have you ever won the Kentucky Derby? If you're in Canada and somebody, you say you're a horse trainer, they ask, have you ever won the Queen's Plate?
Really?
Oh, yeah. So, you know, it's the tradition is unbelievable. So, like I said, if we get a weanling Canadian bred, I'm thinking about the Queen's Plate.
Yeah. Is there a difference in any way to maybe a different feeling, a different vibe to winning an American classic as opposed to a Canadian classic?
They're both, I mean, they're different, but they're not different. You've both, either case, you've achieved the pinnacle of that country's racing, you know, so it feels good either way.
You talked earlier about being a strategist and loving the strategy part of this game. Talk about your strategy with getting these two horses to the Queen's Plate on Saturday.
Well, again, like I said, when we got Skywire, when I got Federal Law, the first thing we said, well, okay, we're going to aim them for the Queen's Plate. There's always, you know, bumps in the road. There's always changes. But I would say with Skywire, especially, he's done everything to this point. He's right. It's kind of been the plan. Federal Law's kind of shot around on me because he doesn't show, you know, he runs different type of races. So I think both horses, all you can ask for is to be the best you can be on that day. And I think we're both there. So now it's up to them.
Well, it's not only been a good run for you over the course of the last year. It's been a good run for your son, Norman, who went out on his own, too. And a week after the Belmont at Churchill Downs, he gets his first stakes victory as a trainer. It had to make you really proud.
Oh, I was so proud, you know, and then to do it for Miss Mary Lou Whitney. I mean, it was unbelievable. Very proud. I'm proud of, you know, everything he's done, and you're only just seeing the beginning.
Why can he be a good horse trainer? What attributes does he have that can make him a good horse trainer?
Well, he's a hard worker. He's a smart, smart guy. He's a lot smarter than I am. And he loves what he's doing.
Will he spend as much time strategizing as you do?
Oh, I would say so.
Yeah?
I would say so. He's got a pretty wonderful wife, too. So that's they make a beautiful team, a great team, and if they ever have any kids, they'll probably hate horse racing. But anyways, we'll see.
Listen, good luck on Saturday, and let's go get number 3 here in the Queen's Plate.
Well, we're going to be trying really hard. Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, buddy.